Welcome to The Ralph Report with Ralph Garman.
Hey there, boys and girls. Welcome to The Ralph Report for a Monday, the 21st of May. I know how you feel. I was putting my kid to bed last night. She's like, Daddy, I'm sad. I don't want to go to school tomorrow. And I was like, oh, honey, welcome to the world. This is how you're going to feel every Monday of your life. Nobody wants to go back to school or work or what we have to do, but here we all are. And if we're there for each other, we can help each other get through this week. And speaking of being there for each other, I do once again have to give a quick shout out to all of the 3- and 4-star generals who showed up in a big bad way yesterday for the Ralph Report live stream video event. We do one of those every month, and yesterday was the day for Maze, and it's just so great to turn on that camera and to have you guys out there and to hear your suggestions and answer your questions, to get a chance to talk to you live. I mean, I talked about it in the event itself. It's the closest feeling I get to being on live radio again. When I used to do live radio in the mornings, it felt great because I knew that people were hearing me in the moment. There's a certain energy and a pleasure that comes with that that you just can't get any other way. So it meant a lot to me that so many of you guys showed up yesterday and were there asking your questions and had suggestions for the show. And we wrote them all down and we're working on them all. And so thanks again to everybody for being there. And we'll do it all again next month. We'll let you know soon when the next live stream event will be so we can all get together again. Meanwhile, it is a Monday, and that means that it's time for me to tell you the top 3 things I learned this weekend.
The top 3 things I learned this weekend.
Number three thing I learned this weekend is I am not alone in my fascination, my fixation, my obsession with the smell of Play-Doh. I thought that was my thing. I thought I had a weird kink about loving how Play-Doh smells. I loved it when I was a kid. And when Olivia was younger, she doesn't play with it so much now, but when she was younger, I don't know, 5, 6 years old, she went through a hardcore Play-Doh phase. And I was at her side every time she busted out the Play-Doh. I am obsessed with the way Play-Doh smells. Love it so much. Well, I'm not the only one. In fact, it is such a popular smell that Hasbro announced that they are trademarking the smell of Play-Doh. They did it Friday. I read this over the weekend. That they went to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and they have registered the smell of Play-Doh as a trademarked scent, which I didn't even know you could do. But the odor is so distinctive, and Hasbro describes it as a sweet, slightly musky, vanilla-like fragrance. Sounds like my crotch. With slight overtones of cherry and the natural smell of a salted wheat-based dough. You know you can eat Play-Doh. Did you know that? Yeah. It's not as good as the smell. Anyway, the scent of Play-Doh, they say, has always been synonymous with childhood and fun, and so they've trademarked it. If you do something with the smell of Play-Doh, you're going to get slapped with a lawsuit, which made me wonder, are they afraid someone's going to do that? Someone's going to put out a Play-Doh cologne or Play-Doh air fresheners or something? I guess maybe somebody could. I don't know who would or why, but in case anybody does, the smell of Play-Doh has been trademarked. So just get that out of your little mind. Don't even think about it.
Number two
thing I learned over the weekend is I am officially a Las Vegas Golden Knights fan. I am a hockey fan in general. Of course, my first true love is my Philadelphia Flyers. But I, over the course of these playoffs, and again, I say this all the time, can't beat playoff hockey. It's just maybe the best playoffs in all professional sports because any team can win any series. And that's what keeps it interesting for me. I watch all the playoff games because you never know what's going to happen, and it's always exciting, and it's always intense. But these Golden Knights, man, this is the story, the sports story of the year as far as I'm concerned. They beat the Winnipeg Jets yesterday 2-1, and they clinched the Western Conference title for Vegas. And here's the thing. This is a ragtag, literally, by definition, like a Hollywood movie ragtag team. This is a bunch of scrappy bastards who were made up almost entirely of other teams' cast-offs. They were pieced together in the expansion draft by whoever teams wanted to get rid of. That's who went to the Golden Knights. This is their first year in existence, and they're going to be playing for the Stanley Cup, the highest achievement you can get. In their first year, it's beyond improbable. It is a Hollywood story, and I'm completely wrapped up in it, and I'm a diehard now Golden Knights fan, and I will be rooting for them throughout the rest of the playoffs, regardless of who they play. We'll find out more today. The Tampa Bay Lightning and the Washington Caps will be playing later on today. The Bolts lead that series 3-2, so we'll find out tonight whether the Capitals live to play another day or whether it's going to be Golden Knights Lightning in the finals. And I cannot wait for these finals. It's going to be awesome.
Number one.
And the number one thing I learned this weekend is that I have no interest whatsoever in the royal wedding. I think I was uniquely alone this weekend. My wife was interested, watched all the highlights. I mean, we're not crazy enough that my wife got up at 4 o'clock in the morning or wherever, whenever you had to watch it live. But she caught up on all the recaps. Everyone I know surrounding my wife, all of her friends, even male friends of ours, fathers of kids that my kid goes to school with, everybody talking about this. I had no interest. And I'm an Anglophile. I love British things. Beatles, Bond, I mean, that whole, the UK in general, big fan. But just no interest in the royal wedding. I felt kind of alone in this. But I'm happy to announce, and that's the good thing about having a UK correspondent, is that we've got a guy who was there in the UK while it was going on. He was knee-deep in it. And so I'm glad we have Steve Ashton on board today to give us a special report on the royal wedding from Saturday. If you missed any of it, here he is with all the important stuff that you need to know about the royal wedding.
Well, Steve, I have to admit, I did not watch a minute of the coverage of the royal wedding. I feel like I've somehow let you down, sir.
I'm shocked. Ralph Garman, you're our very own Prince of Playfulness. You're our Duke of Droll and our Baron of Balls.
How was the wedding? Was it fun?
Well, we couldn't escape the royal wedding on Saturday. Well, and also for the last, I don't know, 6 months. Look, I thought I'd fill you in on some highlights, if that's
yes,
all right.
Yes, please do.
So for the sake of the Ralph Report, I did watch the build-up, and the most high-profile guests outside of the inbred upper classes were, of course, the stars of stage and screen. Now, that included George Clooney and his wife, Amidala.
I don't think it's Amidala. I think it's Amal.
Or something like that. Yeah. But she's playing second fiddle in that relationship, right? The queen of daytime, Oprah Winfrey, was there. Oprah apparently had to have a dress made overnight because once she got to the UK, she realized that the beige dress she'd been planning on wearing looked too white, as did the congregation of William and Kate's wedding. So Stella McCartney made her a new one overnight. Now, I'm calling bullshit on Stella McCartney. She's not staying up all night to make Oprah a dress. What I think happened is that Oprah arrived, she binged on fish and chips, and then had to have a new one made, so Stella's people let the dress out. That's what I'm saying. James Blunt and Joss Stone were there, representing the very best of bland, middle-of-the-road, formerly popular British musicians. Idris Elba was there. Tom Hardy was there as well. Here's a clip of what he said after the aria sang by a castrated choir boy greeted the congregation.
That's a lovely, lovely voice.
Posh and Becks were there. Fucking yawn. various people from Suits who I don't know who they were. And a lot of black people, Ralph. A lot of black people were there.
You sound surprised.
Well, not at all. And I think he was fantastic. But the thing that struck me is Prince Philip must have been pissed. It's a good job he's 97 and can barely walk. Otherwise, who knows what would have happened. He'd have let the dogs on them. Sir Elton was there, of course. And when asked what he was looking forward to most.
Yeah, what did he say?
He said singing at the reception. I'm not sure what he would have sang that would have gone down well with the Rolfe family. I think maybe something like, I don't know, Saturday Night's All Right for Stealing the Natural Resources of the Indian People for Hundreds of Years. Nazi Dancer, maybe. Or what about I'm Still Inbred? Who knows? I have no idea. But the actual ceremony, of course, was headlined by Chicago-based Bishop Michael Curry, who absolutely stole the show of the ceremony. And here's a clip.
I know that the Bible says, and I believe it, that Jesus walked on the water. But I have to tell you, I didn't walk across the Atlantic Ocean to get here. Controlled fire in that plane got me here. Fire makes it possible for us to text and tweet and email and Instagram and Facebook and socially be dysfunctional with each other.
That was just fabulous. I mean, he really was the highlight for me, not just because of his fantastic, relaxed and passionate delivery and a beautiful message, but mainly because of the look on some of the royals' faces. It looked like someone had broken into their stately homes and pissed on their hunting trophies. It was an absolute picture. Now, after the service, there was a formal reception and a sit-down meal that, according to the press, was organised and paid for by Prince Charles. Yeah, whatever. That's six of one and half a dozen of the other. Ultimately, it's the working classes that pay off fate for the royal family, but whatevs, bruv. And then there was the party. Now, apparently, DJ Sam Totterley curated the evening set list, which included all of Harry's favourite house tracks, like The House of Hohenzollern, which is a very clever reference to the German monarchy, by the way, Ralph.
Oh, I see. Thanks.
I did some research for that gag. The themed cocktails apparently pay tribute to the bride and groom. One of the cocktails at the evening reception was called When Harry Met Meghan, which presumably contained a mixture of ginger and opportunism. I don't know. The couple also apparently selected Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody Who Loves Me as their first marital dance, which... So made me question, so you're dancing to a track that says, I want to dance with somebody who loves me. Not that I'm dancing with somebody who loves me. I want to dance with somebody. I don't know. Some foreshadowing, perhaps. Who knows? Fingers crossed. The evening's festivities were hosted by James fucking Corden.
There you go.
I'm sure fans of the Late Late Shit Show will hear all about it. And there was apparently then after that, there was an after party. So you've got the ceremony, you've got the sit down event, the reception, then you've got the evening reception, and then an after party. And that was held at the Chiltern Firehouse in Marylebone, which, just to let everyone know, is an area of London. It's not a venereal disease. And then there was a separate party in a soundproof private home in Chelsea, presumably where guests enjoyed watching working class oiks fight to the death. That's what my imagination tells me.
Sure.
But it all went off rather well. It was a beautiful sunny day. The guests were happy. The media, of course, were happy. The general public on the whole weren't really bothered. But, you know, I had an observation, Ralph.
Yes.
People of my generation, like, and I'm in my late 40s now, people who take an interest are constantly looking. It's almost like looking for a Diana Princess of Wales reboot. They want that kind of relive that sort of heyday of the 80s. So on that basis, I'd say to Meghan, buckle up, love. If you haven't had enough of the roles, be sure to check out my two-part guide to the roles on Patreon for two-star generals and above. And for more As It Happened commentary, maybe just go over and have a quick look at my Twitter feed. I was tweeting as things are going on, so it's at Steve Ashton. But that's about it, Ralph. The party of the year is over. There'll be a few sore heads tomorrow and no doubt a raise in local council taxes to pay for the whole fucking thing.
Before you go, Steve, please tell me that Elton John had something else to say after he performed at the wedding.
Well, apparently the big joke was that Harry got up and said, does anyone play the piano? And apparently Elton John said, fuck off!
Thanks, buddy. Talk to you later this week.
Talk to you later.
And there you go. That's why I didn't need to concern myself with the royal wedding this weekend, because I knew Steve would fill me in on everything that was important. And those were the top three things I learned this weekend.
The top three things I learned this weekend.
All right, let's get to all the entertainment news, shall we? It's a Monday, so that means we take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office to kick things off to see what people went to see in theaters over the weekend. No surprise here, Deadpool 2 was the big winner at the box office with an opening of $125 million this weekend. It fell just short of the $132 million made by the first Deadpool 2 years ago, but still did a pretty spectacular job. New opening day record for an R-rated film with $53 million for Deadpool 2. So congratulations to my buddies Paul and Rhett, who wrote that film, and everyone involved with Deadpool 2. Number one at the box office by far this weekend, knocking Avengers Infinity War out of the top slot. Although Avengers Infinity War did pretty well for itself, $28.6 million at number two. Book Club, a new movie starring Diane Keaton, came in at number three with $12.5 million. Life of the Party was fourth at the box office with $7.7 million. Breaking In was fifth at the box office. Then Show Dogs. We talked about Show Dogs on Friday. This unbearable turd of a film made $6 million, making it number six at the box office. Overboard was seventh. A Quiet Place came in at number eight, Rampage at number nine, and RBG, the documentary about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, still hanging in the top 10 with $1.2 million this weekend. But now we've all been beaten to death with this stupidity that is this Yanny versus Laurel debate that's going on the internet. I didn't even talk about it last week when it was happening because it was just everywhere and it's so dumb. It's one of those ridiculous things where you look around in the world and say, really? This is what captures the imagination of the planet, is whether somebody's saying Yanni or Laurel. But I thought it was interesting that we finally can put this debate to rest, thank God, because it's ridiculous. But the guy who actually recorded the word, which is Laurel, by the way, obviously, anyone says otherwise is a dumbass. He came out and was talking about the word and the origin of it and why he recorded it. The actor's name is a Broadway actor. He was in the Broadway cast of Cats, and he's done a bunch of television shows, and he's been an actor for a long time. His name is J. Aubrey Jones, 64 years old. And he had a gig as an actor recording words for vocabulary.com. This is a website that will give you, as you can imagine, pronunciations for words. And he said he recorded 36,000 words over the course of 6 months. That was his gig. And this was one of the words he recorded.
Laurel. Laurel.
And he came out this weekend to talk about whether it's Yanni or Laurel. And Yanni isn't even a word, I don't think. Unless you're talking about maybe yoga? Maybe has a place in it? Regardless. He came out at it and confirmed what we all knew, which was he was saying Laurel. That was one of his words. He was saying Laurel.
Laurel.
And he said he was amused to no end when he found out his voice had created such a heated debate on the internet. But it was Laurel. It is Laurel. And it will always be Laurel.
Laurel.
And so now, can we stop that? Can we stop talking about that and move on to important things? Like Jennifer Aniston playing a lesbian president? That's right. She is going to be in a new Netflix political comedy called First Ladies, and she will play the first female president, who also happens to be a lesbian, and it follows her and her wife, played by Tig Notaro, the comedian, as they move into the White House. So I'm sure it'll be a very edgy, current, cutting-edge film that everyone will have to watch, but I think I'll pass. Boy, Jennifer Aniston bugs me. She's right up there with Reese Witherspoon for me. I have no idea why, but she just bugs me. So I will not be watching First Ladies, but God bless them. God bless them all. And do you remember the dark day of April 12th of this year? Wasn't that long ago. It was a very dark day for everyone in America. That was when Taylor Swift released her cover of Earth, Wind, and Fire's awesome song, September. She released her cover of it. It had banjos and shit in it. It was just God awful. First of all, here's the original. Here's a little taste of the OG version, Earth, Wind, and Fire, with their tremendous funk song, September. You want to get people on a dance floor at any party ever? You put on September. Listen to this.
Do you remember? When it first died, September. Love was changing the minds.
Tadoff Switler comes along, has to put her stink all over everything, ruin all things that are good, and she releases her cover version of the song, which was hideous, which was just a shit tower of music. Well, one of the writers of that song, Allie Willis, has come forward to defend Taylor Swift. Well, actually, it started as a defense. It gave the illusion of a defense of Taylor Swift, but then quickly became one of my favorite slams of the year against this cover. This is what she said this weekend while she was performing her own show in her hometown of Detroit, where she was talking about the song and it's Taylor's cover version of it. I didn't think she did a horrible job. Yes, I felt it was as lethargic as a drunk turtle dozing under a sunflower after ingesting a bottle of Valium, and I thought it had all the build of a one-story motel. But I mean, the girl didn't kill anybody. She didn't run over your foot. She just cut a very calm and somewhat boring take of one of the peppiest, happiest, most popular songs in history. There you go. That's from one of the writers of the song. So I think we've also put another internet debate to rest, whether that song was awful or just merely shit-tastic. All right, if it's your birthday today, let's see what celebrities share your birthday on this May 21st. Mr. T, 66 years old today. A pity the fool don't buy me a cake. He's 66. Judge Reinhold, actor from the Beverly Hills Cop movies, of course, and Fast Times at Ridgemont High. 61 years old. Lisa Edelstein from House turns 52. And Firuza Balk from The Waterboy turns 44 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman, and I walk the showbiz beat. And my guest this week in the celebrity interview section of the show is an old friend, one of my favorite people, also a very talented actor and very, very funny man. His name is David Koechner. You know him from his body of work, over 50 feature films to his credit, a ton of television as well, including the role of Todd Packer on The Office, was always great on that show, but probably best known to you as Champ Bailey from the Anchorman movies. He was also in 40-Year-Old Virgin, The Dukes of Hazzard, Snakes on a Plane, Talladega Nights. Got a great turn in Thank You for Smoking, another one in Cheap Thrills, Krampus most recently. Great guy, funny guy. If you happen to be in the Kansas City area, he is a Kansas City boy himself, Tipton, Missouri, actually, nearby in Kansas City. He'll be in Kansas City this coming weekend, May 25th through the 27th at the Kansas City Improv, if you want to check out David Koechner's work. At the beginning of this interview, we talk a little bit about growing up in Tipton, Missouri, what that was like for him, and when he discovered that he wanted to be on stage and how he got there. Ended up in Chicago, working in the Second City and the Improv Olympic. We talk about all that and more with my buddy, Dave Koechner. Ladies and gentlemen, what a pleasure it is to have with me this week a legend, dare I say it, a comic legend amongst me and a couple other people. That's how highly we think of this gentleman. He's an old friend of mine, and he is one of the funniest guys I know, and one of the nicest, too, and that's always a rare mix in this business, especially when it comes to comedy. You're not quite as damaged as some people I know in comedy, David.
Well, I guess I hide it differently.
David Koechner, by the way, Hello. Is who I'm talking to. David, a pleasure to have you here.
Ralph, thank you.
Always. I've been trying to do this for a while. We've been pushing it back because you've been such a busy man. That's good news. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. But yeah, Ralph, always a delight to see you.
You're very kind.
And happy again today to be in your humble abode. And to be sitting across the table for you. This feels somewhat, folks, just to get set the table, and we are on a table, feels a little bit like Charlie Rose.
Here. You know, that's one of my goals. Not the sexual harassment aspect of it.
Yes.
But I like the long-form sit-down mm-hmm. interviews. That's when I got out of radio, or rather, should I say, when they kicked me out of radio, one of my goals was, when I did this show, is I wanted to sit down and do long-form interviews because, you know, you've been on sure. the K-Rock show that I used to do. It'd come in and be like, okay, tell us about Krampus, and when's that open, and how'd you get the job? Yeah. And then 8 minutes later, you're out the door. Mm-hmm. You don't learn anything about the person. I don't think any of that is interesting. I think it's cool to be able to sit down with somebody at their leisure and look back over their life and say, how did you get from there to here?
Yeah,
exactly.
A nice deep dig. He's got a shovel in one hand and he's got an old out back. There's an old steam powered shovel, mechanical shovel. I'm not getting the right word for it, but I'm sure that one of our listeners.
I think steam shovel.
It was a steam shovel.
Yeah. What they called them.
Yeah. Anyway, he's got that back there. Neighbors are not happy, just to let you know, folks.
But we're going to go excavating into the life and career of my buddy Dave Koechner. Let's start. I'm always fascinated. You know, I'll talk to some people. Like I've had Colin Hanks on here and John Cryer, and these are guys whose families had a showbiz background. So you kind of see their path, right? But how does a kid from Tipton, Missouri.
Right.
What was that life like for you as a kid? I can't imagine show business or the arts loomed large in your daily life as a kid in Tipton.
I like that you say or the arts because you're right. So picture central Missouri, dead center of Missouri, a town of 2,000 people. So there is not a progressive exchange of ideas. no one is yearning to know more about the world or really about themselves.
Right.
I believe that life should be self-exploration.
Yes.
And curiosity.
The unexplored life is not worth living.
Yes.
They say,
who is it? There's a quote.
I don't know who said that.
We don't know, but your listeners will.
Yeah.
So, it was a bit frustrating. I realized about age 10, like, because we had cousins in the city, I realized I want to live in the city.
Which city is this?
Kansas City.
Okay.
And so we would often visit. So I had this feeling like I've got to move. Not that I didn't love my family and the kids there, but I felt like there's more. I was yearning. And by the time I was 13, I really had this feeling that I'm going to say it. I had a destiny. I really felt it, that I wanted to do something. And I thought it was going to be politics because I'd never met an actor. You only had access to how actors succeed through TV Guide or Reader's Digest or Life magazine, stuff like that. There was no internet or books. I had read tons of books about the early Saturday Night Live when I was in college a couple years later. I saw Saturday Night Live when I was 13, the original broadcast. I was very excited about that. And I think that's the first time I had inklings of like, I want to be an actor. But I had no idea how that would come about. I knew that a lot of those people came from Second City in Chicago. So as I went on into
even
college,
at that age, you knew sort of the origin stories of some of those people?
You would hear stories. You'd read about it. Maybe I didn't know at 13. I don't recall.
Because I think we're about the same age. And I at the same time, remember discovering that show. And then a little bit later, SCTV. And I was like, What is this world? I knew movies and I knew television. I watched the Brady Bunch and sitcoms and stuff, and I watched a ton of movies. But sketch performing to me was like a brand new universe that I never even knew existed before SNL or Second City.
Yeah, and it was a big deal that was a live show.
Yeah,
that
for
was
sure.
Huge.
Yeah, and that was part of the energy and excitement. You
right.
know?
I knew my parents would not let me watch it because it was a bit risque for them. And they went out dancing almost every Saturday night to
the
Farmers and Sportsmen's Club. So I would babysit, a.k.a. Terrorize my three younger siblings and have them in bed by 10:30 Midwest time to watch the show. And I was so excited.
Wow.
And so from there, I would see some late night Monty Python movies and be absolutely blown away and really had this feeling like I'd like to do comedy because I was the class clown, but had no access to how a person becomes an actor. So when I chose my area of concentration for college, it was political science because I loved politics and I really thought I could make a difference in the world. I was chosen to go to Boys State, which is a civic-minded, week-long camp for boys that are interested in politics, and did that. And so I was a poli-sci major. And then about the third year, I started realizing, you're going to have to either become a lawyer or a teacher, and then you're not going to go into politics because you're not moneyed from a wealthy family or from a family that's in politics, nor are you the smartest guy in every room you walk into. And I believe that is what it takes to get into politics.
Does it really, though? Does it really, David?
Well, in some cases, but you know.
Back in that time, maybe.
Sure, but it was money. It still is money.
Right.
And so they're going to back a guy that's willing to compromise whatever they have to do to win. And
sure. You have to sell your interest to the highest bidder, and that's how you make your money to get where you need to go. Right.
Right. I started realizing, this isn't the life for me. So I quit going to my classes, and my dad, Cecil Koechner, said, Dave, I don't know what you want to do, but I don't think you want to go to school. Now, if you knew Cecil, that is probably the best Cecil Koechner impression No.
Is that dead on?
It's dead on.
All right, good.
It's dead on.
Let me ask you, let's back up a little bit. You're going to the boys' state or the boys' camp or whatever that thing you're talking about. You're living in that part of the world. Politics at some point, obviously, is a goal for you. Does it all have a conservative, what we would call right wing now, bent because of the part of the country that you were in?
Not for me. My Not mother was always a Democrat.
Hmm.
I remember distinctly her ironing clothes, watching the Nixon, the Watergate hearings in the afternoon, and her cussing Nixon.
Wow.
And of course, her curse was, I swear to God, that's a bunch of, so fill in whatever you want, folks.
Right, right.
I heard my dad say, I don't know if we can curse on this show.
Oh, yeah.
I heard my dad say fuck once in my life.
That was
when
it,
he was really upset because we had a manufacturing plant and something that had happened cost a lot of money to rebuild. And he said fuck once. And I was just shocked. He wouldn't say the word crotch because I think he thought it was a dirty word. He would say croth. Right there in the croth area.
What was the manufacturing plant in your family?
He manufactured livestock trailers.
Trailers, okay.
For turkeys.
For turkeys.
Yes.
Turkey
when
trailers.
I say turkey coops, people go, oh, you guys raise turkeys? And I say, no, we built turkey coops. Oh, so you raised turkeys in your backyard? No. Wow, how'd you get through school? All right, let's start with livestock trailer. Now we know what we're talking about. And it's the most genus species you have to go through.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you got turkeys across country.
That's what we built, the transportation moded trailer to take them. We did not raise birds.
Right. You're just moving them. You're building the things that moved them.
Thank you.
All right. No interest.
You got it right away.
No interest in the family business, I can imagine, as a kid growing up?
Not really, no. Because I knew I wanted to go.
Right.
And I started working for my dad when I was 7.
So you had an ass full of that by the time you turned 13.
Oh, yeah. By the time I was a sophomore.
Yeah. So you're looking at the horizon. What college are you in by the point where you stopped going to class, by the way?
University of Missouri.
Okay.
M-I-Z-Z-O-U.
And you are done. You're stopped going to classes. Dad recognizes that maybe that isn't the life for you.
Right.
Next step is Chicago for you? Is that what you
thought? Yeah, I thought I was going to get an ash chewing, but my dad was quite happy because now I'm on my own. He sold me the car I was driving, which was his, and then I worked 3 jobs there in Columbia, Missouri, where the university is. A friend and I went and visited another friend in Chicago, went to the second city, and my mind was blown. I was like, this, because I'd read the books by then. I knew this is where so many people from SNL had come from.
Right.
Then I noticed they taught classes. A light went off. I was like, oh, that's how you get here.
More with Dave tomorrow. We'll talk about his training in Chicago with the legendary Del Close. At the I.O., also Second City there in Chicago. Moving on to Saturday Night Live. If you have an interest in improv comedy, if you're a fan or you want to try it yourself, this will be a great interview for you to listen to this week. So more with Dave tomorrow. I'm finally going to get around to playing my interview I had this weekend with my buddy Brad Meltzer. Very talented, brilliant author. Has a great new book out. We'll talk about that tomorrow. More showbiz news and a lot more. So come on back tomorrow to the Ralph Report. Because I love you, and I mean it. Bye.